It's time now for the Todd Leonard Show. Leave those negative stories behind as we focus on the positive and hear from those who give back and help others. Let's start your day with some inspirational stories. Now, here's your host, Todd Leonard.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We have a great show. We're going to have Trooper Richard Tabor join us, New Jersey State Trooper, and it's such a privilege to have him on this morning. Before we talk with Trooper Tabor, I just want to wish everyone an incredible 4th of July weekend. I was with my family yesterday. We had a great time at our neighbors, and, you know, one of the things that we never should forget is really what July 4th stands for, which is obviously the creation of our incredible country and all the sacrifices those folks made way, way back for all the freedoms we enjoy today, and we should never take that for granted. We live in the greatest country in the world, and despite all of our problems, we should be very thankful and blessed for the sacrifices they made hundreds of years ago. Good morning, Trooper Tabor. Are you with us?
Good morning. How you doing, Todd?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much, sir, for joining us. So I did just a little bit about the 4th of July, but I know that we're going to explore with you this morning your incredible service to the country, really your roots in Elizabeth and, you know, serving with the New Jersey State Police for many years now. Before we talk about that, though, what does July 4th mean for you? Because obviously I'd like to get your perspective on it.
July 4th means a lot to me. You know, growing up, watching how the country has changed over the years, exploring different countries while being in the service, you see how blessed we are to live in the United States. You know, although we have so many trials and tribulations, there are so many other great things about this nation. And I'm very appreciative of everything we've been through to where we are today. And 4th of July just means everything to me because we are truly independent.
Absolutely. No question about it, Trooper. So what I wanted to do, if I may, is, you know, I bring guests on every week, and I'm so privileged to have you join us this morning to learn a little bit more about your background. And I know, obviously, we're going to talk a lot about law enforcement and a lot of different issues. But I wanted to talk with you first about your roots and about Elizabeth, because I realize, you know, I grew up in Springfield, and Elizabeth wasn't very far away. What was it like growing up in Elizabeth as a young person?
Growing up in Elizabeth was very difficult when I was younger. When I was younger, I grew up in the projects called Pioneer Homes and Magnolia Manors and Radlag Manors. Pioneer Homes was one of the roughest projects probably at that time in the country. It was a lot of drugs, violence, gangs. People, you know, a very impoverished community, no jobs, a lot of fathers gone, you know, also not having my dad. And it was just a rough time to grow up, you know, when you had those type of people in control of the community. You know, you see drugs at a young age, at 5 years old, you see guys overdosing on drugs, people selling drugs to people. Then at 5 years old, I also witnessed a gang member kill somebody, you know, and it stuck with me for the rest of my life, you know, and the guy slaps me in the head and tells me to go home because he almost killed me. And I was 5 years old, you know, just trying to play football in the courtyard, and this was in broad daylight. So growing up in an environment like that without a dad and without, you know, any real structure can be very difficult.
Listen, no question about it, Rich. What as a young person, I mean, I can't even imagine what that would be like. So in essence, in Elizabeth, where you were being raised, was extremely difficult, very rough, very tough, a lot of violence. And it sounds like, unfortunately, not a lot of role models for you to really kind of figure out where you want to go in life. So with that, it sounds like you were raised by your mom.
Yes, by my mom.
And you know, I know that your mom is Mildred Purdy.
Yes.
Well, God bless her. So she was raising you, and you have other siblings also.
Yes, I have a brother and a sister. I'm the youngest.
Okay. So you're in Elizabeth. Obviously, you're a young person. You don't have a lot of, you know, things to look forward to. You, unfortunately, a lot of violence and a lot of different issues going on in the community. So as you got a little bit older, was there certain things that, you know, you thought about the police at that point in your life when you're, you know, you're really a young person?
Yeah. You know, your view on the police when you're growing up in a neighborhood like that is a very negative view on police when you're growing up in a neighborhood like that, because the only time you usually see police when you're growing up in a community like that is when they're arresting someone. So that's all you see, you know, and then you think your future is to only either sell drugs, to be a ball player, or to become a rapper. And I'm sure people have heard this many, many times before, but that's the perspective that you have because someone said it previously that you can only aspire to be what you see, you know, and if that's all you see and that's all you know, that's what you're going to aspire to be, you know, and especially when no one's talking to you or speaking to you on a positive light of the other opportunities that you have that are out there, you know, and for me it was different because For a long time, I wanted to be a ball player, you know, or a rapper, or, you know, things like that, you know, but one day what changed for me was when I saw two troopers walking through my projects. And at that time, cops weren't really allowed to come into the projects, or not that they weren't allowed, but they wouldn't come in there by themselves, though they would come with a large group of 10 to 15 police officers at a time so they wouldn't be attacked or, you know, anything like that. So these two troopers were walking through Pioneer Homes, and it caught my attention, not only because of the uniforms, of course, but because they were two troopers just walking through the projects, you know, and it caught my attention by them just walking through that. It drew me to them, and I had to say something to them, you know, and I ran up to them, and I didn't know who they were, so I immediately asked, "Who are you guys? You know, where are you guys coming from?" They said, "Hey, kid, how you doing? We're troopers." And I said, "What are you guys doing here?" They said, "We're just doing a walkthrough." I said, "No one's bothering you, though." They said, "Of course not, kid. We're troopers." And I said, "How can I become like you?" And they said, if you keep your nose clean and you do the right thing, you could become a trooper one day, too.
How old were you at that time, Rich?
I probably was around 6 or 7.
Wow, incredible. And you remember to this very day that experience with the two troopers. You know, it's kind of interesting. So when you were such a young person, a little kid really, and you saw the troopers, there is something about the state police in terms of how they conduct themselves and how they carry themselves. It's almost a certain type of respect. They just command it. Was it something that just struck you, just the way they carried themselves?
The way they carried them. First of all, the uniform, of course. The uniform stands out automatically. Everyone in the state of New Jersey knows that the uniform stands out. Those troopers at that time were very clean. You know, they were very well put together. They were in great shape. You know, and they were just walking through. They had this demeanor about them that was different. You know, everything was just different about them, and even the way they spoke to me, you know, they didn't yell at me, they didn't do it, they spoke to me like a human being, you know.
Was that the first time that you felt in your life a positive experience with the police?
That was the first time. That was the first time I felt the positive experience. You know, at that time, I'm not saying that, you know, cops are bad or anything like that. It's just that I never had an experience to actually talk to a police officer one-on-one to see what it was like to become a police officer or how do I get to that point, because obviously no one in my family have known, because nobody in my family were cops. So no one in my family knew how to get to that point.
Right. So you're so young. You're six. You have an incredible experience with two, you know, state troopers. Obviously, they touch you in a way that you didn't even realize at that point in terms of trying to change your trajectory in life. So walk us through. So you obviously start to grow up in the community. You're still witnessing, it would be, I'm assuming, a lot of violence, a lot of folks going in the wrong direction in life. Let's say you're in Elizabeth High School, and I understand in preparing, you were a tremendous athlete. You were a wrestler. You were on the state championship football squad. You even played some golf. Where were you thinking in life at that point? What was your next goal?
Like every other kid, to be honest with you, in the neighborhood I grew up in, we all thinking we're going to the NFL.
Right, you're going to be a baller,
That's automatically, that's the thought process was, I'm going to the NFL. There's nothing that's going to stop me. That's just what I'm going to do. But then, like, as usual, reality strikes. You know, reality hits that most likely you're probably not going to go to the NFL. So you got to have a different, you got to take a different route, you know, to do something else. You got to have a backup plan. So what also struck me, like, jumping back to when I was a little bit younger, was in middle school when I witnessed 9/11 happen. I was in Grover Cleveland Middle School, and I witnessed 9/11. You know, as most people do, I was in the basketball gym. We were playing basketball for, you know, in school at our gym session, and the teacher shut everything down, and he told us to get upstairs to class, and then we ended up watching it on television. And saw the second, I saw the second plane hit. You know, live, I thought it was a movie. I couldn't imagine that was actually taking place on American soil, because, you know, in America, you don't realize how blessed and how sheltered we are that we don't have to experience things like that. So I couldn't believe that it was really happening. I thought it was literally a movie. You know, but when everything came in reality and I went back to my home that day, I lived across the street from the pier in Magoria, man, at that time. I lived across the street from the pier, so when you go to the pier, you can actually see the building still smoking, the tower still smoking. So that's when reality struck. It hit for me, and I said, wow, this is crazy. And I said, if things don't work out for me as far as football, then I'm going to go serve my country.
Yes, you know, something interesting, Trooper. You know, I was actually on trial. I was working on a personal injury case in Elizabeth. I was on the fifth floor in Elizabeth in the courthouse when all hell broke loose. And I remember vividly as well just the horror and terror in everyone's faces when we realized the gravity of the situation. Looking out the window, we had a bit of a bird's eye view on the tower. It's starting to burn, and it was really beyond surreal. I remember the lockdown mode for a while. No one knew what we should do, if we could leave the courthouse, and it was certainly a lot of turmoil. So that, obviously, that horrendous event in our history touched you as well. So I understand you went on to college, Union College. I believe also, I think you met the love of your life, right, at Union County College?
Yes, I did. But before I went to college, I actually went into the military before I went into the college. I went to Fort Knox, Kentucky, where we did our training to become a CAV scout. Then I ended up going to the 82nd Airborne Division down in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And shortly after that, we deployed to Baghdad.
Well, let me ask you this, you know, Rich, and thank you so much for your service to our country. I mean, that's why I especially asking about what 4th of July means, since you understand the sacrifices more than most. Why did you get involved in the military? Did you have some relatives or friends or in your community that decided to serve?
No, we have ROTC in our school, but I never joined ROTC. What caught my eye with the military was after 9/11 happened, you know, I knew that it was my duty to serve my country. You know, although we have our, you know, differences and everything like that, this country gives all of us a lot. That's why people every day die to try to come here. You know, people lose their lives trying to come to this country because this country gives us so much, you know, and that's understood. It's a lot that this country gives us. So with that being said, I wanted to serve this nation. You know, I wanted to serve the country. I wanted to give back in a way to do a service to the people. And that's why I joined the military.
Well, God bless you for doing that. That's really amazing. So in essence, where you grew up, it was pretty much unheard of. Everybody else was out in the streets doing their thing, and you know, you felt it was your obligation, which is certainly an incredible thing to, at a young age, to join the military. What was that experience like, Rich, in terms of serving, and being really in the thick of it?
Oh, it was, incredible. I gotta be honest with you. It was incredible. It's no other way for me to put it but incredible, because of how strict they are on you, the things that they teach you, the perseverance that they make you, like everything that they make you overcome. You know, before you join the military, like when you join the military, when I joined the military, I'm a bigger guy. So for them to tell me in combat arms, you're going to run 8 miles today, I looked at the drill instructor and I said, there's no way I'm running 8 miles. There's no possible way. And he looked at me and said, yes, you are. And guess what? I ran 8 miles.
Yeah. You're a big fella. How big are you?
What's that?
You're a big guy. I saw from the picture.
Yeah, at that time, I probably weighed about 230 coming out of high school.
Right.
I was probably about 230. But then the drill instructor also told me, you're going to lose all of that weight. Don't you worry. So I lost 30 pounds within 8 weeks.
Oh, my. Yeah. You were working it.
Yeah.
But
yeah, they worked you out.
Yeah, no, I can only imagine. I mean, obviously, to serve in our great country, you have to be really in tip-top form. There's no question about it. So when you joined the military, what was your mom's reaction? Because I know how much you love and adore your mom and how important she's been in your life and how active she was in the community. What was it like when you told your mom you were going to enlist?
That was a very rough time. Of course, my mom, she loves me so much. So, you know, every parent that hears their child going to join the military, automatically, they don't want their child to die. That's the automatic reaction of they don't want their child to die. But what I told my mom was, I said, Mom, we're a strong Christian family. We're strong in our faith. I'm very strong in my belief in Christ. And I believe that just if God has a set time for me to go, he will not change it just because I joined the military. He won't say, well, Rich, you were supposed to go pass away at 90, but since you joined the military, yeah, your time has changed now. You're going to pass away probably when you go to war. It doesn't work like that, Mom. So, listen, I want to serve my country. I want to, you know, give back. That's what I want to do, so please let me join. And I was about 17 at the time when I wanted to join, so she had to sign for me. And at first, she just would not sign, because she knew I wanted to do infantry. So when I decided to do infantry, she said, I won't sign if you want to do infantry. You have to think of something else that you want to do. So I went back to the recruiter, and I told the recruiter, I said, give me something else like infantry that I could join, but it doesn't sound like infantry. So the recruiter said, okay. He said, you could become reconnaissance. You could become a scout, CAV scout. So CAV scout is also combat arms. We work very close with infantry. And that's what I ended up picking up. And I told my mom, I said, Mom, all right, the new job I got, we're basically going to be doing surveillance and reporting back the enemy's movement. That's it. You know, and my mom said, okay, well, how close are you going to be to the enemy? I said, we're going to be far away, you know, just looking through our binoculars and everything like that. And we're going to report back to intel about what we see going on, the activity. And she said, okay. So she signed me up.
Wow. Well, so let me tell you.
After she signed me up, she asked the recruiter. She said, after I'm gone already in Fort Knox, she asked the recruiter, so what exactly is CAV Scout? And he mentioned to her, oh, it's just like infantry.
Oh, my.
So that first phone call home was not pleasant. Was not pleasant at all.
How long did you serve our great military?
I served in active duty for 3.5 years, and then I went on to the National Guard. entered for a total of 12, I believe.
Well, that's a great, great commitment, and God bless you again, Rich, for that service. So you were also, you served in Iraq. I mean, you know, for us, that we just owe you such a huge debt of gratitude for all the brave men and women in our military, and for the sacrifices. And you kind of touched on a little bit, you know, when you guys are out there fighting and defending our country and protecting our country, there's loved ones back home, right? Every night, every day, every moment, wondering if their loved ones are going to get back. So that's really ultimate sacrifice to just to keep us so so protected. So when you return back to the United States and back into your community, and really, you know, one of the major reasons why I wanted you to come on the show, Trooper Tabor, is to talk about your commitment to the community. So when you came back to Elizabeth, your roots, did you have an impact on any of the local kids when they saw you?
Oh, yeah. The local kids, when I got back, even before, they loved me a lot. You know, for some reason, I don't know, I just always appealed to them. Like I always attracted them to, they wanted to talk to me. They wanted to, you know what I was doing, know what my next move was and everything like that. So when I came back from Iraq, and I got out of active duty, and now I was home on the regular, it's very interesting because two kids came up to me. One is Todd Cook and Kevin Sims. They came up to me, and I'll never forget it. They said to me, they probably were around 10, 11, and they said to me, "Rich, you're a role model in our community, and we look up to you. You need to do something with us." And I immediately answered, and I said, "What do you guys want me to do with you guys? Like, I don't know what to do. What do you want me to do?" And they said, "I don't know. Take us somewhere." So I said, "Okay, listen. If you guys do great in school and you pass all your classes and you do well, on the last day of school, I'll take you guys to Six Flags." And it was just those two, right? So they said, "Okay." Now, and these kids got their grades up like you wouldn't believe, to ensure that they were going to Six Flags that day. So their grades were like great, were wonderful, and the parents were trying to figure out, like, how do they do this turnaround? So I went and spoke to the parents, and I said, "Listen, I made them a promise. I said, if you guys get your grades up, I'll take you to Six Flags. Is it okay if I take them on the last day?" The parents said, "Of course." So, you know, especially in the environment that we're living in. So the parents said, "Of course," and I took them to Six Flags that day, and they had a blast. I mean, that was their first time at Six Flags. They wanted to ride everything. They wanted to eat everything. They just wanted to do everything possible. Oh, and the parents knew me growing up, so that's why they allowed the kids to go with me to Six Flags. So after that, we get back, and then I told them, "You guys continue good behavior. You know, we'll do something else, like go to the beach or something like that." So 2 weeks later, it wasn't just them. It was 12 other kids.
Wow.
That came with them. And they said, "Well, we want to go to the beach, too. What if our grades are good? Would you take us to the beach?" So I'm like, "I'm going to need some help." So I called my buddy up, Patty L, and I'm like, "I'm going to need some help. I know I can't go with 12 kids by myself to the beach or to Six Flags, you know, because that's a liability. I know that much at that age. That's a liability." So, and plus I didn't have the transportation, the van or anything like that. So what I had to do was call 4-H, Rutgers. That's a part of Rutgers, because I was alumni with them. And I went to 4-H for about 14 years, you know, 4-H camp in Stokes State Forest. And they let me borrow the van. So I was able to take the kids to Six Flags once again, and then to the beach trip, you know. And then after that, the program just kept growing and growing and growing. More people wanted to get involved. More people wanted to do things. So before you know it, I had to make the program official.
So what made you, how old were you at the time, Rich, when you came back from your deployment from Iraq and you're back here in Elizabeth? How old were you when you're starting to kind of mentor these young kids and really show them the path in life?
I was 21.
Oh, you're a young man. All right. So at 21, what do you think inside made you, like, just be up ready to step up and lead at a young age?
Because that's what I needed when I was that age. and not many men. There were men in my community. I cannot sit there and lie to you and tell you there weren't men. There were no positive role models in my community, because there were. You know, you had Sean McClain, Mr. Ford, Mr. Newman, Rock Bierman, you know, William Jones. You got a bunch of guys that were role models, but I knew that these kids needed more, because at that time I needed more.
Now, was your dad in the picture, Rich, growing up?
No, I met my dad only three times. So once when I was 12, once when I was 16, and once when I was in the military.
Oh, all right. So you understood then how important it was to have a father as a role model, and unfortunately you didn't have your dad around very much, but you obviously have some other mentors, and thankfully you got on the right path. So I understand with Elizabeth, you know, obviously you're doing your thing, you're trying to lift up the community. What made you decide to pivot and then get into law enforcement? What was the driving force?
Automatically, you know, getting into law enforcement, you know, most people know that, you know, you want to help people. That's the main reason that most people get into law enforcement, is to help people. You know, you see that there's an issue in certain communities or in certain places, and you just want to help. You know, and that's the reason most people, most men and women, join the force, is to help people. It's to serve, pretty much.
Right. So, in terms of that decision, how did your mom feel about the fact you were going to try to enlist in the law enforcement?
My mom was so excited that I wasn't going back to Iraq, first and foremost. She was so excited. She was very happy about me joining the state police. But she said to me, son, do you think you can do it? Because no one in our low-income housing has ever become a trooper before. And I said, interesting. I never knew that. You know, and she said, yeah, I've never seen anyone become a trooper. Don't you think it'll be easier if you just become an Elizabeth police officer? And I said, yes, but I made a promise to myself that I want to become a New Jersey State Trooper, so that's what I'm going to do. And so I started the process.
All right, so you had, obviously, you spoke to your mom, and you served our military so proudly, and you decided to try to enlist with the New Jersey State Police. What impact do you think the two troopers had back when you were only 6 years old or so, and you met those, you know, brave and great folks in your projects? Their influence on your life to kind of fast forward, and now you want to join their elite force?
So in our community, right, we had some police officers. My mom would tell me, son, you know, she explained to me, son, you live in a very rough community. The community is full of gangs, is full of drugs, is full of violence, and you have to stay away from that. And the police are going to be here a lot because of the type of community you live in. And if you ever get stopped or pulled over or anything, a cop stops you in the street, please comply with what they're saying, okay? And it's your job as a young man in this community to get to know the police officers, because you want them to know you, to know that you're doing the right thing as a youth. And I said, oh, okay, that's pretty interesting. That's true, so let me do that. So I got involved, and I tried to, you know, make myself known to police officers so that they could know who I was, and I ended up attracting who is now today the deputy chief of police, Sacco. I ended up going up to him, and I said to him, you know, my name is Rich Tabor. Nice to meet you. You know, I'm going to go to the Army. I met him around my 11th grade year, and I said, I'm going to go to the Army, and I'm going to become a New Jersey State Trooper. So Saka says to me, all right, whatever, kid. When you join the Army, let me know. You know, so once in a while I would see him, I would talk to him and everything, and then I enlisted into the Army. And I called him and I let him know, hey, I enlisted into the Army. He's like, oh, wow, okay, you're serious. So when you're done with everything, let me know how it goes, or keep in contact with me while you're in the military, you know, so you could keep me posted on everything. So the summer before I left, you know, I realized how serious he was about looking out for me, because I was hanging out with two guys that I knew growing up, but these guys were running the streets, but they were my friends coming up, you know, and we're sitting out front of my house and we're talking and hanging out. And Saka goes up to me and he tells the two guys, get out of here, get out of here. And then I'm sitting there, so I'm like about to go upstairs, and he's like, you stay right here. So now I'm terrified, like, what did I do wrong? And Saka, he says to me, listen, these two guys are running the streets. You cannot be with them, because if you're with them and they're accompanied with by you, guess what? You're going to be an accomplice to whatever crime or whatever they're doing. So you need to stay away from them. And you got a good thing going for yourself. So when I saw that, I said to myself, you know what? There are a lot of good police officers out here that do want to help. You know, it's just sometimes that the environment that they're in, they just never know. They got to keep their head on the swivel. You know, they never know who's going to attack them or what's going to happen or if they're going to even make it home that day. So immediately I knew, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I got to stay on this path. So I ended up going, after I came from the military, I went into immediately went into school, and then I went right in to sign up for the state.
Absolutely, Rich. We're going to take a very short break and continue this really, really, you know, powerful show. We'll be right back.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.
So, Rich, we were just discussing with you how you got involved with the New Jersey State Police, and I understand that you actually went through the recruiting class in 2014, am I correct?
Yes.
Right. And I understand that because of your commitment and your dedication and your loyalty and your spirit, you're actually given a very prestigious award, Lieutenant Walsh's, in his honor. You got a very important award out of one of the recruits, out of 149 recruits. We understand that you exhibited dedication, commitment, loyalty, unselfishness during your training. What was that like to be singled out among your peers? Because New Jersey State Police, I mean, the recruiting class is the cream of the crop. What was that like when you learned the meaning behind Lieutenant Walsh's life and getting that award?
It was great. I mean, it was a beautiful thing, you know, especially for my class to stand behind me with it. You know, it was a great experience. I mean, it kind of left me speechless, and I see how happy my mom was. It left me speechless.
So what do you think, you know, about these? Because these qualities, when I was thinking about having the great honor, you know, speaking with you this morning and for the listeners, about dedication and about commitment and about loyalty and unselfishness. I mean, these are incredible qualities, and to be singled out among so many great, you know, recruits, where do you think you got those great values and those kind of attributes?
From my mom. She's very dedicated, and I didn't tell you guys to start to begin with, but my mom was very active in the community. My mom grew up in Jersey City, New Jersey, and she was born and raised there, and she was started being active in the community at the age of 13 or 14. My mom started a track team at the age of 14 with youth that were younger than her, and used to take them to New York to compete at 14 years old. She used to take them over to New York by herself, about 10 youth, through on the train and everything. And the city allowed her to do it. They paid for it. She got the city to sponsor some of it at the age of 14, and I couldn't believe the stories I used to hear about some of the stuff she used to do. And then it transferred over into Elizabeth, you know, where my mom continued to work in the community. She used to do different fashion shows, used to take us on trips, you know, used to do little pool events for the kids, little racing events around the courtyard. So my mom was very active in the community, and seeing, like, as I said before, you're going to do what you see. And that's what my mom used to do, and that's what I saw. So that's why I do that now, I believe.
So, well, obviously, what a great woman to follow. I mean, your mom sounds like an incredible person and really instilled so many values into you, which obviously still resonates to this very moment. In terms of your involvement with Elizabeth and the roots and your feeling of commitment to the community, in 2014, you also got another great award. The Housing Authority of the City of Elizabeth also gave you an award for your commitment and accomplishments. What was that like? Have a dinner in your honor. What was that? What was it? What were you feeling?
First and foremost, I didn't know that was going to happen. I didn't know that they were going to do that. And Housing Authority was so excited because, you know, they watched me grow up. You know, they watched me grow up from a baby. You know, I lived in public housing my whole life. You know, so they literally watched me grow up and watched me beat the odds that are for the kids that grow up in my community. You know, most of us either will sell drugs, get in gangs, or end up dead before the age of 21 or 25. You know, that's the life expectancy of men growing up in my community, you know, to just not make it or to not be successful or to not ever move out of the neighborhood or get caught in the environment. So to see that they, you know, recognize that and they did a nice, a beautiful dinner for me and awarded me because I was working with, I've been working with the kids before I even, you know, joined the state police. That was a beautiful thing for some, to see that people noticed.
Well, you're, listen, you know, that's a you're a beautiful person for what you're doing. You're lifting up the kids. Walk us through, though, like, you know, so the kids are there, you know, you're in the community and you're being a role model. What type of advice or mentorship have you been giving the kids during that period of time?
Oh, I've been trying to give them so much, so I have to, you know, hone it into a few things for them. So a lot of times what I tell them is, first of all, like I said, we're a faith-based organization, so we're a Christian organization, and I want to be sure to make sure I let that be known because that's who I give all the things to is to Christ for me getting to where I am at today. And, you know, I would be nothing without my belief, my faith in Christ. And so we're a faith-based organization, and that's why I ensure that these kids understand faith. Faith is important, you know. When all seems lost, it's not, because Christ still has your back. You know, Christ will be with you no matter what, no matter what trials or tribulations you go through. He's going to be with you, you know. And then on after that, I let them know, you know, education is key. Education can free you. Education will be a big part of your success. But you have to educate yourself. You have to read, you know, and you have to continue to move forward through school, no matter how tough it gets or no matter what's the home life situation like, you have to continue to move forward. And I'm going to be here to back you up on whatever you need. And then lastly, you got to keep your nose clean. You can't get involved in gangs. You can't get involved in drugs. You can't get involved in robbing people. If you do these things, you're going to find yourself in jail or dead. And you, it is going to make it almost impossible for you to become successful.
So, Rich,
among many other things.
So, we really didn't touch on, but I want to focus on, you know, you created this important organization, New Life Direction. What year did you start that?
2014.
And what was the, like, the impetus? What was the basis why you started this organization?
First, I started the organization. Well, first, when I was working with kids, I figured, this is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to work with kids, and, you know, we're going to keep it informal, and I'm just going to work with these kids and do different things with them. But then I realized I was starting to go broke because I was doing everything out of my own pocket. So I was pretty much going broke. Couldn't even pay my own bills because I was so dedicated into changing their lives that, you know, I was blinded with everything else. I wasn't able to take care of myself. So Housing Authority instructed me. They said, you got to turn this into an organization because you have over 30 kids that you're working with. Turn it into an organization so you can receive funding from donors. And I looked at it, and I'm like, how do you do that? You know, because I wasn't aware of what a nonprofit is and how to do it or anything like that. So they instructed me on how to do it, how to turn it into a nonprofit. So I turned it into a nonprofit, and then people would, you know, write us a check. Like, they'll give us $30 or $40 or something like that. So we can do buy food or do different things for the youth. And then eventually, for us to get more donors, we had to turn it into a 501c3. So in 2017, we turned it into a 501c3. So now we're tax exempt and had to turn it into an official organization. So eventually, I will have the ability to help more youth.
So in terms of New Life Direction, if someone's listening today and wants to help out or get involved, how would they reach you?
They could either go to the website, they could give us a call. Usually our secretary at New Life Direction, she picks up the phone all the time. Anytime you'll call pretty much from 9 to 5, she'll pick up the phone.
And what's the number, Rich?
The number's actually on the website. The number is actually on the website. I don't have the
All
number
right.
Handy right now. I'm sorry.
No problem, but New Life Directions, is it? What, so what's the website?
www.newlifedirection.org.
Okay, so people that are listening want to lend a hand up and help others. You know, you said some things that are really important about faith and about education and about staying out of trouble. In terms of the kids that you've been involved in, so give us an idea, what kind of programs does New Life Direction kind of perform for the community to help the kids at risk?
Oh, we have performed just about everything. So when you think of New Life Direction, everything that I've experienced coming up, any program that I've experienced and that I've went through and everything I experienced, I've tried to put it all into the program. So the program consists of sports, education, camping in the summertime, Boy Scouts, mentorship programs, girls groups, little achievers. We have just about a wrestling program. We helped our cheerleaders that went to nationals. We helped pay for them go to nationals, you know, and they took fifth at nationals down in Florida. So we have so much that we do. We do tournaments throughout the city. You know, we do have barbecues on the 4th of July a lot of times for the kids. You know, we, like, anything you can possibly think of, probably we're pretty much doing it. And these kids go to camp in the summertime, and we try to raise as much money as possible. A lot of times we come up short, and I felt bad because a lot of kids, you know, that we have to tell no to because they signed up late or something like that. They are very upset. You know, they cry because it's all they have. You know, and it's very difficult, you know, to tell a kid no, especially when you know he needs it. So we do so much, even golfing. I even take the kids golfing. They went for golf instruction. You know, things that they would never be able to experience just by living in that neighborhood, we make sure that they are allowed to get that experience.
Wonderful. I mean, it's great to expose the kids to all these different things. In terms of the organization, besides yourself, because I saw some photos on New Life Direction's website, and I was joking with you a little bit before we brought you on about basically it looks like there's a number of really good ballers there on the basketball court. So you have, what, members of the law enforcement and the kids, they play games against each other?
Oh, yes. I bring the New Jersey State Police right into the project, and we play basketball against the kids. And this is a great experience because it has done so much for the community as far as even how the relationship between Elizabeth Police Department and the people in that neighborhood has changed dramatically. They have explained to me that, you know, now these kids and the people are now saying hi to the police and Elizabeth when they walk through, you know, because they interact with them. They interact with the state police so much on that basketball court that it has been incredible for the change of the community.
Yeah, you know, it's something everybody now is so focused on the relationship between law enforcement and the public. And I love people like you and other folks that are so dedicated to showing the local residents that the police can be trusted. The police can be your friend. The police are just like everyone else. And that interaction, I think, is vitally important. I mean, there's a number of things like on Facebook, for example, where you see, like a white cop playing basketball with a, you know, black young boy. boys, and I love it. I love seeing that interaction, because I do think it certainly serves a really very, very important, powerful message. What is that, your feelings about that, Trooper Tabor, in terms of how your other fellow state troopers feel when they go into, you know, pioneer the local projects in Elizabeth, and they're playing ball with the kids? Well, what's that like for them?
At first, it was, you know, very difficult, you know, because of the stereotype of what the projects are and what they are like, you know, that they are bad people, they're gang members, they're all drug dealers and everything. But in those projects, they're people just like everyone else. And that's the fact of the matter that people do not understand, is that they're people. So when people change their perspective of who they are and understand that they're just people like everyone else, that changes everything. And that's what it did for a lot of the troopers that went in with me. You know, they went in and they're like, oh my God, these kids are lovers. You got kids jumping on my classmate, Lombardi. You know, he's a white male gentleman. They're jumping on his neck. They're hugging him. They're like, they don't want to let him leave. Like, it was a great, great experience for a lot of these guys. And a lot of the troopers that do it, they ask me, they say, hey, can we go back again? Please let us know when you're doing it, because we want to go back again. And the whole entire community comes out to watch these troopers play against the community. And it's a beautiful experience.
It looks amazing. You know, like I said, I was joking with you, but it looks like some serious ballers out there playing. But I love the interaction, and obviously, my goal, obviously, is to lift up the community by having guys like you come on and talk about that. Because many times, of which we talk about the unfortunate interactions instead of all the positive, encouraging things. You know, we have a mutual friend, Paul Profeta, had him on last week about the Urban Foundation and being involved with helping folks that were unfortunately mixed up with the gangs and violence, but turning their lives around and giving them a second chance in life. And I think that's so important. Well, what are your thoughts about that, Trooper Tabor, in terms of just really lifting up the community and having these interactions and how that really serves the community?
Oh, Paul Profeta, first of all, he's awesome. You know, he's a great guy. You know, for him to take his time out to see that there's an issue in the community, and to give a lot of these young guys, young African-American men and women, that most people won't even take a second look at, he gives them a chance. Gives them, you know, their grants or to start a business. Or he even came down to our community to give the kids, all the kids in my program, over 80 kids, he came in, gave them gifts for Christmas. You know, it was a great experience, you know, to see what he does in the community, you know, because a lot of times most people don't realize, but I think it was about, when I looked at it, don't quote me on this, but 7% of African Americans in America are granted loans for businesses. So that makes it almost impossible for African American males and females to get a grant for businesses. Even with myself, to be honest with you, like, I came up with a patent, my friend and I, Haniel, and we came up with a fingerprint purchasing patent, you know. And no matter where we went to try to get an investor, you know, they would say to us, you don't have any collateral, you don't have this, you don't have that. You know, it's a $1 billion idea, it's a great idea, and that we still have the patent for today. But you don't have any collateral, and we're just not willing to fund it. So it's very difficult for a lot of minorities to, you know, get a step up in that business aspect of anything. You know, it's just very difficult. And Paul Profeta, he gives a lot of people the opportunity and the chance to become successful in business.
No question. I mean, Paul's a wonderful guy, and I was really privileged to have him on last week. And what you touched upon is the beauty of Paul is, you know, he's doing so many things to lift up the community and help others, young entrepreneurs, and also just the folks that you're serving so well in the community. So in terms of your life, you're a state trooper, you have a beautiful wife, your kids look adorable, you know, you have a lot of demands, but you're still finding time to be so involved in Elizabeth. What's it like? I mean, you roll back into Elizabeth, you know, you were born and raised there. What's the feeling now? You feel we're making progress, and the kids are getting, more and more kids are getting on the right path and being more productive members of society?
Yeah, Yes, we are now starting to get on the right path. A lot of times what people don't realize is, for one, to answer your question, yes, it's very difficult having a wife and now four children.
God bless you.
Continue to work in the community. It's very, very difficult, but my wife has been a blessing. You know, she has been a blessing to us to allow me to continue to work with the youth in the community, because it's a sacrifice, you know, and she has been a blessing to allow me to do these things, and I thank her for that, you know, to understand that that's my calling, and that's what God has called me to do, is, you know, to serve, to work with people. So now, it has been difficult, you know, serving the community, but yes, we are making progress. Right now, we have gotten a girl into Bloomfield College. She's on a half scholarship right now, and we helped her get funding to continue into Bloomfield College. We have also helped the kid get into AIC, which is in Massachusetts. He's going to school there. He's going to college. We have gotten a guy into the United States Navy. He's serving in the Navy right now. We got two guys ready to enlist into the United States Army. So it's getting these kids in a positive direction, and it has been working. Even as far as getting the kids their license, you know, some of them get their permit done, but their parents don't have a car, so how are they supposed to even take the test to get their license? So we even helped them do that. It has been great progress in the community, but like anything, it takes time. And that's the thing. I'm just willing to put the time in with them. That's what it is.
Well, it's amazing. So New Life Direction, I just love the name. You know, obviously, if people are going in the wrong direction, you want to get them back on the right direction. I love it. So for those folks tuning in, how do they reach you again at New Life Direction? What's the website?
You can go to the website, www.newlifedirection.org, and we have a phone number at the bottom, the email address. You can email us. Or if you wanted to write a check to New Life Direction, you can just write New Life Direction on there, and then we're tax exempt. So we can send you all the paperwork, and you can send it to 688 Maple Ave in Elizabeth, New Jersey.
Well, that's wonderful. I mean, it's a great cause. And like I said, I grew up in Springfield, so Union County is my roots as well. And I go to court a lot, and obviously I feel good knowing guys like you are out there doing your thing and lifting up the community. There's no question about it. I wanted to also touch, Trooper, a little bit about just kind of like how things are going in law enforcement today. You know, as a concerned citizen, I have so much respect and admiration for law enforcement. I'm active in the 200 Club in Morris County. And you know, I think we just owe such a huge debt of gratitude to everyone in law enforcement for their sacrifices. Any given moment, you never know what you're going to be in the middle of, and I think it's certainly something that deserves a lot of respect and admiration. Just law enforcement in general, morale, how things are going, what's your sense of it?
When it comes to policing right now, most police officers of the United States just have to understand that, you know, when one person messes up, it looks bad on all of us. You know, because when you join the police department, like, for example, when I joined the state police, I'm New Jersey State Trooper Rich Tabor. I'm no longer just Rich Tabor. I'm New Jersey State Trooper Rich Tabor. So whatever I do affects the New Jersey State Police as a whole. So I got to ensure that I'm doing the right thing at all times, even when no one's looking. I got to make sure I'm doing the right thing, because it affects everyone, not just myself, but everyone else. So a lot of times, like we discussed before, when I police for me personally, before I leave the house, my wife and my kids know that it's a possibility that I might not make it home. And I'm able to live with that fact, because I took an oath in the Army, and I took an oath as a police officer, and my job is to serve the people. My job is to be selfless and not to be selfish. So in being selfless, one day it might require me to lay down my life for someone I don't even know. And as a police officer, I have to be willing to do that. And I am, because that's the oath I took. So when it comes to policing, yes, the morale is all over the place, and things can, you know, be a little unbalanced at times. But right now, as a police officer, that's what we have to do. We have to be selfless in order for things to change.
Absolutely, Trooper. You know, I mentioned the 200 Club, so I've been privileged to be on a number of years now, and we have an annual awards dinner. We basically give out awards, valor, meritorious awards for really heroes. And I've seen firsthand, I get these reports on what the law enforcement folks are doing, including the state police, and they do put their lives on the line for total strangers. I mean, going into burning buildings, rescuing people in burning cars, putting their lives in the line in some extremely harrowing circumstances, and God bless you and everyone that puts their lives on the line for us. I think we can never lose sight of that kind of commitment. And I also agree, you know, in all professions, there's some things that go on that are a black eye on the profession. Doesn't mean the whole profession's bad. There's just some folks not doing the right thing, and they should be fully accountable. And if, in fact, laws are violated, they should be, you know, fully have the full weight of the justice system on their head. So justice is certainly served. Trooper, before we conclude this really important interview this morning, any other advice for the listeners in terms of your view of giving back and being part of the community? Because that's the whole idea of the Todd Leonard Show, is people giving back, lifting others up, not so worried about themselves and the accolades, but just doing the right thing. Really, what you said, when no one's even looking, just doing what really should be done. Any parting advice for us?
Yes. You know what? That's a good question. So what I would say is, it's important in the United States of America that everybody just plays their part. Just plays their part. Whether it's a small donation, whether it's you see a homeless guy on the street and you just buy him some food, versus just giving him money. If it's a kid that you know is in need and you're willing and you're able to help him, but you gotta be willing, you know, as well. And just help them. Help one another, help each other, and just do our part. As long as we all do our part that we can play. And I'm not saying do something big. Everybody doesn't have to go out and do what I'm doing. You know, that's my part. That's the part I have to play. But some people can donate. Some people can use their time. You know, everything counts. And it's not always all the time just about money. If you don't have money, that's cool. You have time. Donate a little bit of time, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, a little talk with a kid that's living in poverty might change his life forever. You never know, because it changed mine. You know, so my advice to everyone is just to play your role and just do your part. And that would make things better in the future.
Well, Trooper DeBoer, you've done more than your part. You're a beautiful guy, and, you know, what you've done with New Life Direction and been a role model in Elizabeth, lifting others up, and really being a shining light for folks. Despite a lot of adversity in your youth, you've done so much in your life, and I certainly wish you the very best going forward, because, you know, guys like you are so important. You're doing so much to lift others. So God bless you and your incredible cause, New Life Direction. I urge everyone want to go visit and donate, speak to Trooper DeBoer. Maybe you can volunteer your time. So for those, I just wanted to say, guys like Trooper DeBoer make this show so worthwhile for me. These are folks just giving back. If you know people that are lifting up the community, reach out to my website, toddleonardshow.com. Give me a call, 973-920-7900. Remember, as Trooper DeBoer said, we're all in this together. We can all work together and make this world a better place. Enjoy the rest of the holiday weekend. I hope you tune in next Sunday. Take care.